7. Affy hadn't realized anything was amiss until she was smack in the middle of it. "Duck!" Wreath shouted. She didn't ask why, didn't turn to look, just dropped to the walkway floor. A metal bar whizzed overhead, slamming into the wall with a reverberating bang. Covering her head, she scurried along until she could push herself behind a barrier of leaves. Maybe it had been a counter once, or a bar. Now, thickly tangled with vines, it had become a hedge. Either way, it would hide her from the looters. Why hadn't she waited longer to come back down? Too late for regrets. She was determined to remain low. If she was revealed, they might attack her, seeing her as competition for the few precious goods on the station. Or, if they wanted to gamble on overpowering the vessel, a pretty safe bet, and a quick clearing of the hyperspace lanes, it was possible they'd steal Affy herself. The Republic banned slavery, but she wasn't sure they were in the Republic at the moment. She didn't put it past some of the thugs to make a quick profit by selling her off to someone who'd whisk her over the border. So, she thought, breathing hard, let's lay low. From her vantage point, Affy could peer through the leaves at the fracas. Already, the Orinkans were ripping through vines on the ground level, tearing a hole that would allow them to rummage through anything hidden beneath. Farther up the atrium, two levels above her, the Mizzi had dug out something that looked like a Maxine armor. That stuff never rusted or wore out. It was worth thousands. The Orinkans would be furious when they saw that their rivals had found such a prize. Furious enough, probably, to start a fight about it. Affy cast an appraising look upward at the wall.
Scover says that back in the day, older space stations used to magnetically seal their entire hulls. If they did that here, just one blaster bolt could ricochet around the station for minutes, for hours even.
The Orinkans didn't give a damn about history or anything else besides their own porcine skins, so they wouldn't realize the danger. If a fight broke out, they'd fire off so many bolts that the entire station would turn into a death trap.
Where was Wreath? His voice had come from below, but she couldn't see much of the station's airlock ring. Were the other Jedi coming to help him? Could they help?
Affy had yet to be much impressed by these feigned mystical warriors, who as far as she could tell had mostly preached at them before dumping them on an ancient station that was a whole lot of bad luck. Affy's brief reverie was shattered when heavy-booted footsteps began thudding against the floor panels near her.
An Orinkan?
Her glance through the leaves revealed a red-scarved human instead, but one whose greedy, callous smile would have looked at home on an Orinkan's snout.
"Pricey market out there for little girls," he said in a sing-song. "These ones aren't too old."
Did he mean for her to hear him? Instinct told Affy that he wasn't a slaver. His interests seemed more personal and even more ominous. Less like she was something he could sell, more like she was something he couldn't afford to buy. Slowly, slowly, so as not to rustle her clothing or disturb even one leaf, Affy reached for the blaster strapped to her side. It slipped silently free of its holster.
"Yeah, firing into the hull could kill us all," she thought. "But only if I miss. I won't miss."
Affy looked through her blaster's sights, aiming them square at the man in the red scarf. If he turned even a fraction of a centimeter in her direction, he'd see her. That is, if he had time to see her before dying, which Affy didn't intend to give him. But he didn't turn. Instead, he began to cackle.
"Yes, yes," he called, probably to one of his shipmates. "That one will do nicely."
He jogged away. Affy felt relieved, more than she should. She'd never killed anyone before, and hadn't wanted to begin.
"If it's your life on the line," she scolded herself, "you shouldn't think about that. You shouldn't think about anything but saving your own life.
Easier said than done. Then a shriek echoed through the station. Affy couldn't see who had cried out, but she already knew. They'd taken Nan.
Reith looked around wildly, trying to identify the ringleaders. If he could take out one or two key players, that might well pacify the others. A voice shattered his concentration.
Reith! Help!
Orla Jireni struggled through the jungle of the exposed atrium, half supporting a staggering Master Komak. Anyone on an upper level would have a clear shot. Reith hurried to help them reach the tunnel that led to the airlock ring. Just as the three of them arrived at the tunnel, Dez Rydan dashed out, lightsaber in his hands, cloak billowing behind him. He went to help support Master Komak, but the older Jedi had already begun to rally.
"What happened?" Dez asked.
"He had a collapse. I think we both did," said Orla. "Or we both had an experience, one I can't easily explain, but it's rooted in the dark side. Of that, you can be sure."
The station atrium echoed with shouts, bellows, and the clanging of metal. Master Komak nodded quickly as he righted himself.
"Orla, are you able to fight?"
Her hand went to the lightsaber at her belt.
"Always."
Master Komak glanced at Reith, who gave him a quick nod. Then the four of them rushed back into the station.
"Orla, take these!"
Master Komak called, pointing at the second level up.
"I'll clear the top levels. Dez, head to the far side of the station and see what's happening there. Reith, guard the airlocks."
Reith nodded. Orla and Master Komak jumped at the same instant, both of them soaring meters high. Reith didn't watch them any longer than that. Instead, he ignited his lightsaber. It had been a while since he'd felt its hum, since its cool green light had bathed him in its glow. But for someone who considered himself much more scholar than fighter, it felt surprisingly good to have the lightsaber in hand again. A shriek drew his attention to a struggle taking place near another entrance to the airlock ring. Reith's eyes widened as he saw Nan in the grip of an enormous human man. Her arms were pinned to her sides, and though she thrashed her head from side to side, it was impossible for her to escape. She looked more furious than frightened, though she had to be terrified.
"Hug!"
Nan cried out.
"Hug, help!"
She had no one she trusted in the whole galaxy to take care of her except one elderly man. Reith didn't doubt that Hag would hobble out there ready to pummel her kidnapper with his cane, nor did he doubt that Hag would quickly be beaten or killed for his trouble. Reith ran several steps toward them, then jumped. His leap took him 5 meters over the grass, through vines that smacked against his limbs, to a point directly in front of Nan and her would-be abductor. Both of them looked equally astonished to see him. Another human, one wearing a red scarf, swaggered up behind him.
"You here to tell us we're not being orderly?"
he said in a mocking voice.
"No law in these parts yet, little boy. That means we can take as much off this station as we can carry. And we can carry her just fine."
Nan's eyes were wide.
"Reith, what are you?"
She lost her breath and could only stare at the lightsaber in disbelief. He ran the scenarios in his head. There weren't many. All of them were more violent than he would prefer. Reith said evenly,
"Put her down and walk away, or I'll be forced to take action."
"What? You think you could take both of us out with your little twinkle sword?"
sneered the thug, still clutching Nan in a death grip.
"Looks like a toy."
"It's not,"
Reith said quietly, putting power and intent into his words.
"Put her down and walk away."
But, like all his other attempts so far at using the Force to change minds, this failed. The red-scarved man swaggered forward, hands on his hips.
"Do your worst, little boy."
Never before had Reith been in this position, where he would have to be the first to take action, to do harm.
He'd always wondered if he would hesitate, if he'd doubt himself. When it came to saving a life, however, there could be no hesitation. Instead, Reef said,
"I understand prosthetic arms are more advanced than prosthetic legs. More comfortable, too."
No flicker of understanding showed in the man's face. Not until the moment after Reef's lightsaber had swept through his arm, severing it at the elbow. A forearm tumbled down onto the ground. The red-scarved man's expression shifted from smugness to disbelief, then crumbled into a grimace as his shocked nerve endings finally broadcast pain. Immediately, the bigger guy dropped Nan and ran into the shadowy jungles surrounding them. Nan put her hand to her mouth as she stared at the abandoned forearm. Reef said,
"I have to stand guard at the airlocks. Come with me."
The red-scarved man finally fell to his knees and howled,
"What have you done to me?"
Reef holstered his lightsaber.
"We'll give you a full medical checkup as soon as the situation calms down."
With that, he pulled Nan against his side. He wasn't sure how to balance himself for the leap while carrying someone else, so he recalculated swiftly.
"Hang on."
Her arms went around his neck. Reef jumped forward and upward in a sharp arc until his free hand clutched one of the longest vines. Their momentum and weight did the rest, sending them swinging in a long curve back to the airlock ring. No sooner had they landed than Nan dashed toward the lock where her ship and Hag awaited. Of course, she'd want to find her guardian, but she glanced back over her shoulder and called out,
"Thanks!"
Reef managed a brief smile for her before he took up his lightsaber again. The Arinkens leveled their blasters at Komak as he leapt onto their deck of the station.
"Magnetically sealed?"
he wondered of the station.
"Possibly."
The blue blade of his lightsaber ignited, its gleam slicing through the murky dark. As the Arinkens fired, he spun his saber, expertly deflecting the beams into the trunks of the larger trees that could bear it, or into some of the boxes and trunks of abandoned cargo. None hit the walls, which was his main objective. Squealing in consternation, the Arinkens beat a hasty retreat. He glanced down just in time to see Orla hold out her lightsaber and ignite it, two blades, shining white, piercing the shadows. The Mizzy began backing off immediately, but it was too easy for the looters to escape. The layout of the station meant he and Orla would literally be running in circles trying to pursue them all. The vessel lacked the military heft to forcibly stop the looters from leaving with their ill-gotten gains. Therefore, stopping the ransacking would have to be accomplished through more than sheer strength. Reason and persuasion hadn't worked either. Time for awe. Komak climbed the rungs of the atrium railing. His eyes detected Affy Hollow cleverly concealed behind a greenery-overgrown barrier. But that hardly mattered, except that this girl, too, would finally learn what the Jedi truly were. He focused his energy and drew upon the Force. Though darkness surrounded him, the sheer vitality of the living things on the station worked on Komak like fuel. Strength flooded his body, and ultimate clarity sharpened his mind. With that, he jumped. Affy screamed, but the sound flowed past Komak, just one more aspect of the illusion reality around him. Reaching out with a Force, he sensed the atrium floor and balanced himself above it, 8 meters above it. Levitation was a complex art. The more academic masters bickered over the reasons why it should be more difficult for Jedi Knights to lift and steady themselves than any other object. Komak considered the discussion academic to the point of esoteric. Besides, this was a skill that for him came naturally. As he floated in the center of the atrium, he held his lightsaber above his head. Its blue glow flickered against the exposed slivers of metal as though igniting dozens of small flames. He called out,
"Hear me!"
His voice echoed throughout the atrium, as Komak had calculated it would. The sounds of combat slowed, then silenced. Faces of many species stared out, weapons at their sides, slack in astonishment at seeing a human male airborne, held aloft by no power but his own. Really, it was among the least significant of a Jedi's abilities, but it made people pay attention and earn their respect, which was all Komak required at the moment.
In the name of the Republic, I command you to cease looting and thievery aboard this station immediately.
Komak's resonant voice filled the entire vast space, reaching every antenna and ear.
Within 15 minutes, every captain of every ship now docked here must have done one of two things: packed up their crew and left, or prepared themselves to peaceably cooperate. You accept the authority of the Republic's laws and stay, or you reject it and leave. It doesn't matter which, but choose one now, or we will be forced to make that choice for you.
Nobody hurried to leave. Instead, many of the groups collected themselves, put down the finds they'd stolen, and began shuffling back toward the airlock level. They'd be ready to negotiate. He and the other Jedi would have a chance to discuss the strange phenomenon emanating from the idols, so strongly linked to the dark side. But Komak didn't fool himself that he'd achieved anything more than a temporary reprieve. As he descended through the air, Rogue rippling around him, he knew this fragile peace would not last long.